Welcome to Parents Perspective. Come on, Denise encouraged four-year-old Kent. That's a doorbell. It's your friend Benji. Let's let him in. Denise opened the door with Kent at her side. On the doorstep were his playmate Benji and Benji's dad.
Happy, come in, poopy head,
squealed Kent, hopping up and down.
Doody doody,
giggled Benji, happily poking Kent in the tummy. Both boys tumbled on top of each other, shrieking with glee and using every epithet that came to mind. Kids! Benji's dad grinned and waved his hands in their direction. Denise just rolled her eyes. I don't know what we'll do about his language. I'm afraid to go anywhere with him. Well, Benji's dad observed, they'll do just fine on a school bus. From a parent's perspective, what should we know and what can parents do about a child's bad language? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with us many times before and is an expert we count on for productive insights. Dr. Stanley A. Fagan is a clinical child psychologist with a background in psychology in the schools. He has concentrated on social skills therapy groups for children from elementary school ages to early high school, working through the Jewish Social Service Agency in Rockville, Maryland. He has three grown daughters, three great sons-in-law, and 10 grandchildren. Welcome back to Parents Perspective, Dr. Fagan.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Can I make a comment on the story? Because that could have been at least a few of my grandchildren.
You don't know we had a tape recorder.
Head. I've heard that a lot.
The truth is out. Now we all know.
I'm not naming names, though.
Why would you say kids tend to absorb bad language so easily?
It's quite a bit of fun, actually. It's very colorful. The novelty of it is special for them. It has a good deal of shock value, you know, as far as getting somebody else's attention and having adults' ears go up. And they hear it. I would be the last to say they never heard it at home with me. So it has some significance. Sometimes certain words are connected with a lot of emotionality, especially if somebody gets angry. Or they're watching some kind of a TV show and, you know, something occurs where the vulgarity comes out as an expression of emotion and it sticks in their minds. You know, they wonder what it is and what it means. So a lot of times they want to find out what this means when they say it. They don't really know. So it has a lot of those. And it depends, of course, what age we're talking about. And your example is young kids. So those would be true. When you start getting into pre-adolescent and adolescent, some of the significance of vulgarity and profanity increases in terms of providing power, importance, rebellion. It's the doing what adults don't want done. It starts to acquire a value for identification with their heroes. Eminem, for example, or stars that they see whose language they emulate, and rap singers who's, you know, or hip-hop, or, you know, where the language is really often very vile, but it gets to be something that they copy. And then it often has a little value, sometimes, at least in their minds, for gaining some status with the peer group.
Because it's like they're doing something bold, adventurous.
Yeah, and tough, you know, and macho. It may help you feel like you're showing the way with some of your talk. You know, like cutting edge words that we don't accept as good language. Some people talk about it also as being a lazy way to use language. We are sloppier with language. We've gotten more casual about standards, about, you know, how we express ourselves, how we dress, you know, what we say. There's a lot more informality. And people think we're getting spoiled in the way we speak.
Is there an age or stage when this tendency is the most prevalent in order to use bad language and everything?
Well, I think your story, again, captures where it begins in a prevalent way. You know, preschool, and we've talked about some of the reasons. Happens a lot there, the fascination with body parts, with toileting. I mean, they're spending a lot of time learning these things. And they're also trying to express themselves around it and find out what else it means. Also, when you're getting into early, school ages, first grade, kindergarten, separating from parents, starting to pick up things from other kids needing to belong. And so you all get into a circle of talking the same way and using language sometimes that could be fun for them, but not what teachers would like.
If it started at preschool or that kind of young age, and uniformly adults did not respond the way we always respond, do you think it would go away?
Probably to a large extent. I think probably 75% would go away. There might be additional that would just come because they kept gaining new words, you know, from media or from other kids, and so they try them out. But I think most of it would go away. I think, too, in terms of language and bad language, that there's a lot of differences in the words that are being used and the function of the words. So bad, quotes, might have different connotations. The toilet words are not bad in the sense that they're hurtful. They're just curiosity and fun, and they have, you know, a cute sound, and they know it connects with body functions and things that are happening that they're doing all the time. But a lot of the words we talk about as bad are really pejorative. They're hurtful to other people. So they can be referred to as assaultive or blaming. And when a lot of our language we say is bad is blaming language. It hurts other people. We're trying to say things that are mean. We could also actually be using blaming language for ourselves. Like I might be looking for a paper that I have lost and can't find it. It might take an hour, and it turns out that it was sitting, you know, right on the desk, maybe behind something else. And I'll say, "Oh, you idiot," you know, something like that, because I'll be so frustrated. But it's still blaming me. So even there, you want to try to help kids to deal with the frustration without blaming. So some things are much more serious than others when they're hurtful to other people versus when they're venting or when they're just being curious in their expressions.
So what you're saying, or what you've said, is our reactions, adult reactions, really are key in all this. I mean, it's hard not to laugh when two little toddlers are saying, you know, toilet words that they think are just hilariously funny. But that's where it starts. So what do we do?
You're right. It's hard not to laugh. It's hard not to smile. And when you're a parent, you exercise a lot more self-restraint than you might if you were just freewheeling, sitting around a table conversationally with other people having fun. So you really have to work on the self-control. And many times, you know, I was laughing inside. And your face is kind of, you know, serious. And your tone is serious. You're saying, we don't use those words. We don't talk like that. That's not respectful to others, or that's inappropriate. But inside, you're getting a kick out of it as well. And I think that's good, because you need to have leeway in your own life for not always doing everything just right. But I want to tell you one story, which comes back to, you know, parents sometimes actually model language that's inappropriate. And kids pick it up from us, and when that happens, they really locked into it. You know, they're going to do it again if you've done it. We were sitting at the table, and Lenore looks up and says, "Daddy, you're a dumbass." And I looked, we were all shocked, horrified, and I looked at Lenore and said, "Lenore, we don't say words like that. Where did you ever get that?" Well, she didn't say anything. But that weekend, we were driving through the parking lot at Sears, and somebody cut me off. And she was sitting right next to me, and I said the very same thing.
Oh,
and immediately I looked down at her, and she was looking up at me with a big smile on her face.
Oh, my goodness. What a great example.
Some people, you know, slip. And if you slip like that, you know, you could say, "Oh, you know, in that case, Lenore, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. Sometimes I make a mistake, too." But some people have it as a habit. And when it's habitual, you can expect large doses coming out of the children in that family.
And then other people's children come and play with those children and learn.
Yeah, they become the leader, the teachers. Yeah.
Isn't it nice we tell our children to share, but that's not exactly what we had in mind. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on bad language.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
We Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Stanley Fagan about children's use of bad language. Speaking of sharing, now how can we deal with siblings who very often play a big role in this mix, especially older siblings?
Yeah, true. And sometimes the older siblings have a lot of importance for kids. They set examples for them. Think about two things in particular. One is trying to prevent the occurrence, as far as prevent the older sib from doing it, but also try to help the younger sib, who's the recipient, to cope with it. So there's two things we're trying to work on. As far as the prevention goes, when we're trying to reduce the swearing by the older kid, you know, parents do have to be clear that there is a value or a limit to appropriate language, to not swearing. So always when we're trying to increase, you know, the good behavior, which in this case is sort of self-control or using better words, we have to be very alert to spotting or spotlighting when they're doing something that's good. And this is not easy, because let's say an older sib who's been saying nasty things to a younger brother or sister is working on not doing it so much. And we don't know how many times they've resisted. Mm. We never see when somebody has held back or inhibited a bad behavior. And we know that what we want to do is we want to make kids feel good for their effort. So if we can't see that somebody thought about saying, you jerk, you idiot, you moron, something like that, and they didn't do it, we don't hear it. So we are able to say, good job, you really showed good self-control there. You really kept yourself in charge. So we have to try to figure out, how do we get the older child to, in some ways, tell us when they were tempted to say something nasty or to use a curse word for their against their younger one, to let us know when they have done that.
Maybe just being around to see interactions and noticing that an interaction could have provoked something and it didn't. And grab that time and say, hey, I bet you were really PO'd about that and you didn't say anything.
That's excellent. That would be an excellent thing. Yeah. As far as the coping, you're really hoping that you can increase the strength of the younger person and maybe learn some ways to handle, you know, like name calling or teasing, maybe to be able to say something humorous to an older sib, and your point is, well, that's as old as the dinosaurs. Or think positively. We like to teach, like in the groups that I'll do, I'll try to teach the kids that they have the power to create their own ideas, either nasty ideas or helpful ideas. So we might practice situations, and parents can do this, where an older brother, an older sister said something nasty. What could they say that would be a negative or unhelpful idea? So they might say, oh, that's really nasty. You are a terrible brother, or I hate you, could be the nasty. But then we teach, could you say anything that would be more positive? Which could be, oh, Bill is losing his temper again. I'll just ignore it. So to work on the idea that they can say so they don't get all upset. Also, we can teach them to relax and to do use words. I mean, this is true. It might be a little harder for a younger, but it's also for the older, to try to do what we say as I statements or I messages. So you say, you know, I feel hurt that you would call me that, or that makes me upset, or I'm sad that you would yell at me that way. Could you please not do that? So these are things that can help the younger person to handle it a little better.
Giving them empowerment tools, basically.
Yeah, and of course you want to be able to tell mom or dad that this has happened, which we always say is a good thing when you can't do it on your own. But, of course, then you're under risk of being a snitch. That's not so positive. Much better if they can learn to handle it themselves.
Now, in today's world, most kids are pretty well connected to media of various sorts. They listen to all kinds of music. They watch television. They go and see all kinds of performances. How can we use the media to our advantage?
Oh, boy, million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, you're right.
It is.
It's everywhere, and it's commercial. And people are trying to make lots of money from this. And kids, we know, actually spend more time watching television than they go to school. And so you've got kids really watching and absorbing everything. And it's not just TV. It's movies. It's videos. It's records. It's video games and computer games. And we know there's some horrible ones. So how do we use it? Well, first we have to work on the limits. You know, we've got to be able to set limits. We have to be aware of what kids are doing and can't use it as a babysitter. I mean, that's convenient for a parent, but, you know, they're basically being poisoned by a lot of what's on TV. So parents have to limit, they have to monitor the quality and the commercials. The American Academy of Pediatrics has recommended watching public TV stations, taping programs without commercials, buying and renting videos or DVDs. And I came across a really nice website that could be very helpful for families. And it's done by the National Institute on Media and the Family. And I reviewed it myself. It gives you ratings of movies, TVs, videos, computer games, so that a parent could look at this and figure out what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. And the ratings are well done. You know, they cover age, the violence, the language that's involved, how much sex is in there, whether there's anything illegal or harmful that's in the content. So www.mediafamily.org. If somebody, there is also one that's called www.tvturnoff.org, which is a campaign to help people use TV a lot less and maybe, you know, cut it out. Uh-huh. And for really zealots here, I guess they could buy the device that's called Foul Language Filters.
Oh, my.
Which you can get at Walmart for about $50, and it's supposed to screen out any bad language from your TV program. So there's a lot of things, you know, that families can do. Mm-hmm. We should know the rating system. People should be at least familiar with that. We have to offer a lot of alternatives to TV. And there's a real issue about having it in your child's room.
Unsupervised,
and then just they can watch it anytime and when... You know, and not even with with a low volume, so they can get heavy volumes of this. The computer is interesting too. If you want a computer in your kid's room, probably have to be pretty careful about what they're looking at. There is what they call that the V chip that you can use for television. I think maybe for computers, too, you might be able to block out some sites that would be objectionable.
I think very early on they need to know there are rules in your household.
Yes.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on bad language.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Stanley Fagan about children's use of bad language.
Now, what happens when a child is maybe 12 or 13 or 14 or even 15 and uses words that we would never use? And they're learning them, of course, from their quote-unquote friends. Mm-hmm. And we can say, oh, we don't use that language or something like that. But that seems to me that, you know, you're not done somehow, that because they're in an environment where it's used all the time.
Yeah.
What can we do about that?
Well, in the school setting, we need to be clear that these things are unacceptable. If they're hurtful words and they're trying to harass or tease or bully, we're getting a lot better at efforts to have school-wide anti-bullying programs, which are largely seeking to make it clear what the limit is, make it clear that people who are hearing it and bystanders are not repeating or ignoring, but instead are saying something to those who are perpetrating. And we're doing a lot more with emphasizing behavior that's desirable. So, for example, if you say there's always two sides to a coin to, you know, negative behavior, in this case, really unacceptable words, the other side would be to be able to say, you know, better words or use more acceptable words or even kind and considerate expressions. So you can flip to the other side and say, well, what do we do to build kind and considerate expression? And there's even a program, Random Acts of Kindness, which is sort of a national movement. There's a website I'll share with you where they're trying to put an emphasis on kids doing nice things, good things. And our schools have been doing this, where we pay attention to when someone is doing something that is helpful. So if a bystander says, hey, we don't use those words, you know, we don't have to jump on somebody and pick on them. Could you cut it out? You know, it's you're going a little too far. That's an act of kindness, and that's one that needs to be highlighted, and people have to be shown appreciation, recognition for it. As far as resistance to peer pressure, inappropriate behavior, it might give you a sense of status. It's not really courageous. So we have to make kids aware that it takes courage to resist peer pressure, not just for language. We're talking about lots of things.
The most dreaded situation for parents, of course, when you take your child out to a public place and your child is using language loud and clear, that is really inappropriate.
First thing, which you're right, it's dreaded. But if you want to minimize the dread, don't overreact and go nuts yourself. Because then the embarrassment shifts from what your child did to what you do. And so a lot of people you see, you know, really overreact.
So you can't put like the shopping bag over the head of the child.
Yeah, I don't
know
how
to do that.
Yeah, you don't want to scream at the top of your lungs. We don't yell. We don't want to do the very thing that the child is doing, which is basically impulsive and without restraint. So you have to stay calm about it. And one way I think that you can do it, which is a technique that I use sometimes for myself in all situations where I'm with other people and kids doing things, I like to say that life gives us lemons. And misbehaviors of kids are mistakes that they make. And they usually our mistakes are lemons. You can't extinguish it from happening. So you want to try to make the best of it. Don't make things worse. See if you can get some lemonade out of it. So I think in terms of, hey, maybe I can handle this in a way that at least shows a calm, you know, reasonable way of reacting so that others can see, not that the kid expressed an expletive, but that I handled it as an adult.
We're all ears. What do we do?
We're ready.
we're taking notes.
So probably good deep breath and counting to three and maybe drawing a little smile on your face, a little one just to relax is a good thing first. And then to talk in a way that reminds the person that there's a limit here. And you say in as calm a voice as you can, is that that's not appropriate. We don't talk that way. Or I don't like when you do that type of thing. So it's not allowed. You can't say that. And you say it in a calm way, but a firm way. So that if anybody else is listening to that, they at least heard that you're not approving this and you're not ignoring it. Some people want to put their head under the sand and they make believe it didn't happen. And the kid just keeps getting wilder
yeah.
because it's not going away.
Yeah, you could walk away a little bit and say, gee, I wonder whose kid that is.
And of course, if a child is going to continue and doesn't respond, you wind up saying, you know, if you say that again or if you do that again, we're going to have to leave this or you're going to lose a privilege, something you're not going to be able to do, something that you wanted to do when you get home, which is play with this or, you know, watch TV or get the treat that we had. So there has to be a consequence, too. And parents do have to also understand that sometimes if a child says it, and you have to understand maybe why the language is being used, and let's say it's coming out of frustration or a sense of failure or, you know, deprivation, you know, they're very hungry or they're very tired, you know, and they really can't take it anymore. You've had them out at the Montgomery County Fair now in 105-degree weather for about 2 hours walking up and down, and a child's finally getting angry and yelling and saying nasty things. And you have to have a little empathy for that, too. So you might say, I know you've got to be really tired. We're just ready to go home. And so you feel angry and you say that. You said that. But we will be going home soon. And you give them a hug and you know, comfort the child. And you
get out of there fast.
And get out. Yeah.
Well, as always, our time is running out before we really feel that we are finished. But we want to leave our listeners with any more resources that you can think of. So are there any things that you think would be good for our listeners to know about this topic?
I came across a couple of books that looked like they would be interesting. They're not too preachy, and they give people a little leeway for imperfection. One by Timothy J., called What to Do When Your Kids Talk Dirty, put out by Resource Publications Incorporated. It was written in 1996. Another by James O'Connor, who seems to have spent a lot of his life working on controlling cussing. He's the director of the Cuss Control Academy. And the book is called Cuss Control, The Complete Book on How to Curb Your Cursing. 2005, Christian Science Monitor. The websites that are good are Scholastic.com, PBS.org, good guidance for parents on the use of media with children. KidsHealth.org is good. NASP, National Association of School Psych, online.org has good fact sheets. I mentioned the actsofkindness.org, the National Movement to Promote Kindness. I talked about the National Institute on Media and the Family. That's a very important one. There's a website called the National Network for Child Care, NNCC.org, has research and parent information through the cooperative extension services across the country. Some really good things in there. And there's a site called health.discovery.com with information on parenting from Discovery Channel. Good information. Well done. And then one database, which people might then, you have to be careful what you're going to pick, and I have to apply my own standards for telling you so I don't give you junk or things that are, you know, very, let's say, biased. This database is db.education-world.com. It has a lot of resources for parents who are seeking information about child care and child management.
That's a lot to go on, I think.
It's a lot to go on.
Well, that sounds like good advice for all of us. We are so pleased that Dr. Stanley Fagan was able to be with us again to discuss some of the issues involved in the use of bad language. So thank you so much for your insights and your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 270. Again, that's 1-800-791-8573. And tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.